This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Well, that was an exciting night. Ted Cruz glided to first place in the Iowa caucuses for the Republicans, followed by Donald Trump with Marco Rubio nipping at his heels. When I succumbed to sleep, the Democratic Party still hadn't declared a first-place finisher, but by this morning, it was officially placed in Hillary Clinton's favor. But Bernie Sanders made a very strong showing, and there was attrition. Martin O'Malley and Mike Huckabee both suspended their campaigns. But oh, how quickly our attention turns, leaving Iowans in peace, with no more volunteers ringing their doorbells, politicians interrupting their diner and cafe meals, and reporters shoving microphones and TV cameras into their faces to record their every breath and political thought. No, now all that attention turns to New Hampshire. Not that the state hasn't already been crawling with all those sorts of people already. It's just that now we only have a week to go before New Hampshire voters get their turn at influencing the parties and the country in the presidential nominating contest. The first primary in the nation is next Tuesday, February 9th, and so we have joined the throngs. We're in New Hampshire, too. We're broadcasting live today from the iconic Baker Berry Library on the campus of Dartmouth College in Hanover. We'll be recapping the results in Iowa and what effect they might have, and then we'll look ahead to next week and beyond. And we'll be talking with the campus Dems and Republicans about the effort to get out the youth vote. I'm joined now by Linda Fowler, professor of government at Dartmouth College, and John Gregg, who's the news editor at the Valley News. It's so nice to be in person with both of you today. Thanks for being here.
It's great.
Thank you, Jane.
Let's talk about last night. We'll do a little Iowa recap first. Let me just ask you, were either of you surprised by what happened in Iowa, Linda Fowler?
I was surprised that the polls did as good a job at predicting what the race was going to be. Because it's really, really hard to forecast election results in a state like Iowa where caucus turnout is highly uncertain. So I thought they got it better than I was expecting.
Even with Rubio doing so much better than the polls had predicted.
Well, yeah, but let's not forget, improving your percentage showing when turnout is low, which it is for a caucus, compared to the state's population. And so even though Republicans had record turnout this year, it was still only 180,000 voters. So, you know, probably Rubio did better than was expected, but some of that is just an artifact of the measure we're using.
John Gregg?
I was surprised. I think Ted Cruz in some ways actually outperformed expectations, and especially after the Iowa governor, Terry Branstad, who's been there forever, really went after him hard because Cruz had spoken out against ethanol. And also there was sort of a last-minute mailer called that the Cruz campaign sent out that said it was a voting violation. It was really an odd way to try and spur people to vote. It was saying, if you don't vote, your neighbors will know you didn't vote. But that did not go over well at all in Iowa, but it didn't hurt him. And I think the reason why, and this may be relevant for New Hampshire with other candidates, is he just had an extraordinarily good game plan and really broad network to get voters to the polls.
Sounds like neither of you were surprised by how close it was between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. The polls had suggested that it would be a razor-thin margin, and it was. And the Democratic Party eventually gave it to Hillary Clinton, which means she gets that extra delegate.
Right.
But that seemed like par for the course to you, Professor Fowler?
Well, I think, again, the polls really got it right. They were within the sampling error. And so when you see that, you think it's going to be tight. I think that one of the things that I had read was that if Bernie did well in the population centers where there were large university campuses, that wouldn't necessarily translate into delegates because the delegate formula is rather weird. And it emphasizes breadth across the state rather than just numerical totals. So that may be responsible for what distance there was between the poll results and the actual delegate count.
Yeah, so do you think he did better in some of those other precincts where there weren't necessarily a sort of concentration of young people?
Well, I looked at the map today, and it did sort of look like he had the places where unions are strong and where universities are prevalent, and those would be the more liberal parts of Iowa, and she seems to have done better in the more more settled other parts of the state. But also, I think the exit polls showed that the turnout around among young people wasn't quite what the Sanders campaign was hoping for.
I'd love to open this up to our listeners listening here or listening on anywhere in our region. What did you see last night? What do you think about what happened in Iowa? And look ahead to New Hampshire just 1 week from today. Do you think anything that happened in Iowa, the Cruz-Trump-Rubio trifecta, the Hillary-Bernie split, is that going to make any difference or any change here for the primary coming up in 1 week in New Hampshire? Call and let us know. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post a note, as always, on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. You know, I was actually wondering if more people would drop out. We saw Martin O'Malley suspend his campaign, and on the Republican side, only Mike Huckabee suspended his campaign. John Gregg, did you think we might see more attrition?
Well, I think I read that Ben Carson has gone home to Florida to get a change of clothes,
right,
and maybe rest for a couple of days. I'm not really sure he needs to bother to come back to New Hampshire because I don't think he's going to do particularly well here.
Although he was fourth in Iowa. I mean, of all of the candidates, he at least was behind Rubio.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think I've read before that on Iowa, just as the Republican caucus is more conservative than most other places around the country, the Democratic caucus voters are generally much more liberal, which also probably would skew to have helped Sanders a little bit against Hillary Clinton here.
But you didn't think anybody else would drop out?
I think so many of the people have really put their stock in how they do in New Hampshire, especially the three governors we're going to be talking about, that's really going to shake things out.
Professor Fowler, does that seem about right to you, that people at least wait till New Hampshire?
Well, I thought Santor might bow
out
today.
Yeah, so did I.
And sometimes people just need to talk to their families and talk to their advisors, and it's partly a courtesy to all the people that have worked for them, so I wouldn't say that there are not going to be any more dropouts. But Santorum hasn't been in the state of New Hampshire, so it doesn't cost him anything, really, to wait until South Carolina and see what happens.
It was hard not to feel a little bit bad for Martin O'Malley, no matter where you stand politically.
Yes, it was.
As you kept seeing that zero, and then for a little while it was at 1%, but, you know, under 1%. And that's sort of just by virtue of how the caucuses are run. If the candidate doesn't have 15% in that initial roundup, then those fans or supporters have to go to somebody else. But it was really hard to keep seeing zeros for him. I can imagine that would be a very demoralizing evening.
Mm-hmm. I think more than anyone in the country, he's probably surprised at how well Bernie Sanders has done, because he really took all the oxygen out of the room for O'Malley.
We got a note from a listener named John, who I'm going to get up here on my screen in just a moment, who says, what are the roadblocks to Bernie doing well in other states past New Hampshire once people get to know him? So we're sort of looking now. Iowans got to know Bernie Sanders. Certainly New Hampshire people already know Bernie Sanders pretty well. But John, already looking ahead here, what are the roadblocks? Professor Fowler?
Well, the southern primaries are the issue for him. And it's partly that the African Americans are a disproportionately large component of the Democratic primary voters in places like South Carolina, which comes next, and then there are a whole bunch of southern states on March 1. And he hasn't had that much time to be down there and to let people check him out. And the Clintons have long ties with African American community, and those ties were frayed during the 2008 primary, but at least right now, Clinton has endorsements of many of the major black political figures in southern communities.
Let's go to Raphael, who's calling in from Barry. Hi, Raphael, go ahead.
Listen, I have one small little problem about that discussion today, and that's the thing that a little bothered me with the coverage. Why is it nobody mentioned what happened yesterday? That he lost six delegates because they made a mistake. The Queen thought whoever won that thing supposed to lose the delegate, and they gave them to Hillary. But everybody mentioned like it's nothing. It's a big thing. Because if he had 6 delegates, he would have won. They are 10% of the they are 10% of the precinct. They didn't count. And everybody is like so happy to declare Hillary that she, the winner, where all those things that happened, I don't get it. Even like VPR, that means NPR, VPR, which like, I know you guys are supposed to be fair, but for some reason, you guys become the corporation thing, too. Thank you.
Rafael, thanks for your call. Are you hearing about any either voter fraud or miscategorization of voting, John Gregg?
I've seen some stuff about a possible coin toss, and earlier this morning I did see an AP report that the Sanders campaign hadn't ruled out asking potentially for a recount. Whether that's still the case, you know, 2 hours later, things move so fluidly. But I think even to the caller's point, you know, although people are saying Hillary Clinton won, I think, you know, Bernie Sanders has a huge amount of momentum coming out of Iowa. As you can see from the reception he got when he arrived in New Hampshire early this morning. So, you know, I think it's, you know, whoever's said to have won Iowa, it still was good news for Bernie Sanders.
I do find that an interesting phrasing when people talk about who won Iowa, because it is proportional. So the delegates go to the people as they were, you know, supported. So, for example, for Hillary and Bernie, who, you know, I guess it's even journalists are now calling by their first names, right. You know, that it's to get 2 delegates between them. That's the difference. So it's not like winner takes all. So who won Iowa? Does it really matter who won, or does it matter how strong your showing is and what that means as you take that momentum into New Hampshire?
I don't think it matters who won in this case, because the news accounts I've read is razor thin a margin between the two of them, and the fact of the matter is that Hillary, who was supposedly a shoe-in for Iowa, barely eked out of holding her own. And so, in numerical terms, whatever the disputed delegate or delegates are, it's not going to affect the nomination process. And I think the press has accurately characterized this as, wow, Bernie did a lot better than anybody ever thought he would.
So it really is about the expectation game rather than the numbers?
Iowa's always been about expectations, not numbers.
All right. So given that the assumption is, or the general idea is, that it is about expectations, did anything that happened last night change things for the candidates as they head to New Hampshire? And as we've already heard, many of them here already. I mean, boy, Bernie Sanders in the morning twilight greeting supporters after being in Iowa through the night. So does this change anything for this momentum now coming into New Hampshire? John Gregg?
I think definitely on the Republican side, the results with Marco Rubio doing as well as he did is terrible news for the 3 governors in the race, former Governor Jeb Bush from Florida, Chris Christie from New Jersey, and John Kasich from Ohio. I mean, one of them, especially Kasich or Christie, really has to break out and probably finish first or second in New Hampshire to keep going. And suddenly, you know, some of those Trump supporters are probably going to go somewhere else. So there's a very good chance they may go to Rubio or to Cruz. That's not to say that Trump might not still win New Hampshire, although I really have my doubts.
What do you think, Professor Fowler?
The collapse of the Carson campaign was the other big story on the Republican side. He was ahead in Iowa last November, I think. So that was a pretty big balloon that popped. And you can tell that the press is now ready to stop covering him. And unless some miracle happens for him in South Carolina, I think he's done. So he was made to order for New Hampshire evangelical voters in many ways, and in the end, he lost out to Cruz's operation.
Well, yeah, if we hear what John Gregg said, earlier, I don't know if he even needs to bother coming to New Hampshire after he has his rest and changes his clothes.
Right. Well, and he's hardly campaigned here anyway, so I just don't think there's not a constituency here saying, I wish there was someone like Ben Carson I could vote for.
What about Jeb Bush, though? Just finishing with about 3% of the vote in Iowa, you know, he could have been one of those establishment candidates who really had some momentum going into New Hampshire and then could be, of those three people that John Gregg mentioned, the one who really ignites the populace in New Hampshire. Does a very or relatively weak showing in Iowa change that equation for him coming into New Hampshire?
I think the message for Bush is that money isn't going to buy this election. He made an enormous splash, as you know, with this huge super PAC fundraising effort. And he spent a lot on ads that the super PAC did in Iowa, and a lot of media stuff here in New Hampshire. And it hasn't moved the needle for him at all.
Well, what about that fundraising, though, now? I mean, we heard last night that this was going to be now that razor-thin margin between Hillary and Bernie, for both of them, meant a great fundraising opportunity. And for Marco Rubio coming in third, maybe that bolsters his support among people who were trying to figure out, who do I support with my dollars on this? So mm-hmm. Do you see, and Bernie Sanders raising $20 million just in the last month, do you see now this huge push for getting more fundraising dollars into the coffers of these candidates who did well in Iowa?
Oh, I think it's going to be a huge boon to Bernie Sanders. He can go back and tap all those people who've given him $25 and say, hey, how about another 50? And
that's
we can
right.
win, and we can win New Hampshire. And
especially, his 3 million individual contributions.
Yeah, especially with him leading in the polls as much as he is in New Hampshire, although that probably is going to change. With Hillary Clinton, you know, a lot of voters have Clinton fatigue. The big question is, do donors have Clinton fatigue? And they may very well.
We're talking today about what happened in Iowa last night in the caucus, the first caucus of the nation, the first nominating contest of this primary season. We are live at Dartmouth College today, and we're speaking with Linda Fowler, who's a professor of government here, and with John Gregg, who's the news editor at the Valley News. Stay with us. Coming up, we're going to talk to the college Democrats and college Republicans here at Dartmouth. And you can add your thoughts to the mix. Andrew says, Republicans are excited because their best candidate, Rubio, did well in Iowa, and because a small but significant portion of Democrats who think that half a loaf of bread is worse than no loaf are trying to nominate unelectable Sanders over very electable Clinton. Andrew says, things are looking good for Republicans. You may or may not agree with Andrew. You can share your thoughts with us. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition to post a note, or call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We've been looking at what the results from last night's Iowa caucuses can tell us about how the primary season is already shaping up and what's likely to happen in next week's New Hampshire primary and beyond to Super Tuesday, which Vermont is part of, and all of the nominating we're going to be doing as a country between now and June. Call 1-800-639-2211 with your thoughts, or note them on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. That number, again, if you'd like to call in, is 1-800-639-2211. Before we return to our political analysts, John Gregg and Linda Fowler, we are here at Dartmouth College today, and we wanted to talk to some of the students here who are particularly politically minded. The youth vote and issues that are important to young people are getting a lot of talk in this election cycle, but is it just lip service? And how do the party organizations on campus here work to get out the vote? We're going to turn first to Austin Robinson, Vice President of the Dartmouth College Republicans. Austin, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
All right, so did you watch the results from Iowa last night?
I did, yes. More than a few of my friends are with me, and it was quite riveting. I was joking with them. I thought we'd open the Andre champagne if ever Bernie Sanders won, and it was nice to see that he came close. Honestly, I wasn't too fussed about the Republicans because Iowa traditionally doesn't pick very effectively, or they don't at least pick the right choice. I mean, you can look at Pat Robertson, you look at Huckabee and Santorum more recently. Neither of them end up with a nomination. Honestly, I haven't chosen yet. I mean, I like the joke, it's sort of like a Russian buffet. There's lots of choice, but it's terrible. It's between pickled herring or jellied meat. So I don't really know who to go with yet. Though I do want to point out that for Republicans, it was interesting, say the least, to note that the man who came fourth place, Ben Carson, retired neurosurgeon, but with a limited portfolio of government experience, received more support than all five of the top former governors. So obviously, that's quite interesting, to say the least. And then when you look at the Democrats, I mean, O'Malley is no longer really part of the race, and it's down to Sanders versus Clinton. And I have to hand it to Sanders. I don't agree with him on anything, but I'd love it if the Democrats did nominate him, because even though right now the polls show him doing reasonably well, I struggle to believe that he'd ever had a chance of beating almost any Republican, because he's just so far to the left on economic issues that matter to most people.
So you're hoping the Democrats nominate him so that it makes it easier for whoever your ultimate candidate winds up being?
Well, I suppose so. I mean, to be fair, if they did nominate Clinton, you have the advantage that just maybe she gets indicted, though she's a lot smarter than some of the people who are chasing after her on the prosecution front. So Sanders, at least electorally, it kind of has limited appeal. I mean, if you look at it, his best shot at winning now is absolutely crushing in New Hampshire, because he appeals towards kind of slightly wealthier, largely a white electorate, and young people as well. And we've got a lot of young people in the state because of the various universities. But when it comes to, you know, voters of minority backgrounds, Clinton outdoes him on a 3-to-1 basis. And so when it comes to South Carolina, which is much more diverse, and of course Nevada as well, he's going to really struggle. So unless he builds up a huge amount of momentum here, it's basically game over in my mind.
Well, let's talk about the constituency that you're a part of here, because we do keep hearing that Bernie Sanders does very, very well among young people.
Absolutely.
Do you feel like you have an uphill road to climb here at Dartmouth College in trying to bolster support for the Republican cause and get people excited who are your contemporaries, young people?
Oh, I think getting people excited is quite ambitious. I mean, we kind of commit to more basic things. Like we've done a few get out the vote drives with Democrats vote registration, which is, you know, nonpartisan and quite effective. Look, I think Sanders has a strong appeal on campus. And when he came to speak here, there was a line building up 4 hours beforehand. The room was full. The overflow room was full. He was a very powerful speaker, to say the least. In terms of Republican candidates, none of them have really caught on campus in a significant fashion. I mean, John Kasich has spent the most effort, I think money perhaps, in trying to win people over. But the fact of the matter is that there's just no competition, because the vast majority of the student body kind of identifies more with the ideals of Sanders, which is understandable because he preaches very specifically towards that demographic.
So it does sound like it's harder for you.
Well, of course it's hard. I mean, it's nigh impossible to convince people to back a Republican at the age of 18 to 22. What is it? Churchill said, if you're not liberal by the time you're 18, you're heartless. And if you're not a conservative by the time you're 60, you know, you're missing another organ.
And but how old are you?
18. Actually, 19 now, sorry.
So are you a Republican?
I think the way I'd phrase it is part of it's just, it's almost like a sport here. Politics is a sport. It's the state sport. And I feel like there's no point joining the winning team, because, you know, it's not good gamesmanship and you're not going to get as much fun out of it. You're basically guaranteed a win. And the other thing is, I do like more the kind of Republican emphasis on fiscal and social responsibility. And I do contrast that with the Obama presidency, whereas as a young person, I mean, I'm a bit underwhelmed, to say the least. He's increased the debt by a greater level than all the other presidents before him. And the kind of, because I've lived overseas my entire life, as an American, I know that the U.S. is not only less liked, but also less respected and ultimately less feared. And anybody with an elementary knowledge of international relations will know that fear is a hugely important component. And the fact that foreign countries like the Iranians feel comfortable taking 10 U.S. sailors hostage doesn't fill me with huge amounts of confidence. But really bringing it back, it's more a debt issue. And the fact that, you know, the president, under his 8 years of stewardship of our economy, hasn't fixed it in a meaningful way. And lots of the jobs have been in government, which are not, you know, hugely productive. And the debt that we've been saddled with is enormous, and we'll have to pay it off. And already, you know, $1 in $5 goes towards paying off the debt, or rather servicing it, not even paying it off. And that's going to grow. And between that and unfunded liabilities, which the administration's done nothing to tackle, I don't find it terribly encouraging looking forward.
Let me ask you one other question. Are you registered to vote in New Hampshire?
Yes, I am.
There have been moves in the past, and there have been moves by New Hampshire Republicans in the past to limit the voting power of college students and young people in New Hampshire who are not from here, but who may be living here while
of course,
they're in
yeah.
college. So do you think that it's right for college students at Dartmouth to be voting in New Hampshire in this primary?
Well, to give you a little bit of disclosure, as you can probably guess, I'm not from around here. I'm American, but I've never lived in this country, so New Hampshire or anywhere else, wherever I register, it doesn't really matter, I suppose. I mean, New Hampshire's the most important vote I'll probably end up casting unless I go into elective office, which right now isn't terribly tempting. But I think when it comes to college students, frankly, I don't think the Republicans are the real issue. College students not having influence in the political system, they're their own worst enemy, you know, because we don't turn out. When you look at the turnout rates, it's a straight, clean-cut graph. It goes from terrible for people who are 18 to 22, all the way up to, you know, really good for 65-year-olds. So if we ask ourselves why it's impossible to reform something like the AARP or Social Security, it has to do with the fact that the interest there, the people who care about it, turn out and vote. So it's one thing for people to go and protest, which is, you know, medium of choice for a lot of 18-year-olds and college students because, hey, it's fun, I don't know. But people enjoy it. At the end of the day, it's just not very effective. And if people don't choose to go and vote, it doesn't even matter if somebody's putting up an impediment towards them registering, because turnout rates are so low.
That is Austin Robinson. He's the vice president of the Dartmouth College Republicans. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective. Really appreciate it. We are broadcasting live from Dartmouth College today. We are talking to students right now from the campus Republicans and campus Democrats to get their perspective on what happened in Iowa last night and what they're doing to try to get out the youth vote, how they feel like this election is unfolding. We're joined now by Madeline Cooper. She is president of the Dartmouth College Democrats. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what did you think of last night's results in Iowa?
It was a really exciting night to be a Democrat. This is my first primary since I turned 18. And it was just incredibly exciting to see so much passion and to see, you know, people all across the country really, really focused on the Democratic vote.
Do you know who you're supporting yet?
I, as president of College Democrats, I'm not publicly supporting a candidate.
You don't have to tell me who, but do you privately know who you're supporting?
Yes.
And as the president of the Dartmouth College Democrats, you don't support somebody publicly because your group doesn't endorse primary candidates.
Correct. We work very, very hard to ensure that we get out the youth vote, that we're making sure that college students' voices are heard. There's so much done to try to limit the voices of college students, and as a result, politicians don't really take us seriously as a demographic of young adults. And I believe that it's incredibly important that we get out the college student vote to make sure that our voices are heard.
So you agree with Austin, at least on that point, that young people, if you want your voices heard, you need to be getting out there and making things happen.
Absolutely.
So how do you do that here?
So we do a lot of work to register students to vote, to make sure that students who are eligible to be voting here in New Hampshire know that they have the right to do so, and to make sure that they have the information that they need and that they have correct information about the process.
What do you think about that idea of whether or not college students should be allowed to vote in the place where they're going to school, not the place where they're from or ultimately might wind up?
I think it makes a lot of sense. We're making a serious commitment to be in this particular place for 4 years. I've been living in New Hampshire for the past 4 years since I turned 18, and so this is the place where the laws are affecting me, and as such, I am very, very grateful to have the right to vote here.
When I asked Austin about garnering enthusiasm among the student body, he said, oh, enthusiasm is too strong a word. We keep hearing that young people are really energized, especially by Bernie Sanders. Are you finding that here on campus?
Absolutely. I think that there is an incredible amount of enthusiasm about this election. I've now been at Dartmouth for the 2012 election and the 2014 midterm elections and now the primary cycle. And really, through all three, I've seen an incredible amount of enthusiasm on campus for the democratic process and for the candidates that have been running.
Do you think there's more enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders here than Hillary Clinton?
Maybe campus skews slightly towards Bernie Sanders, but I would say there's really an incredible amount of organizing happening for both candidates, and I am incredibly pleased by how much support they're both getting, and also how much work students are putting into making sure that, you know, on February 9th, students are getting out to the polls and getting out to vote, no matter who they're supporting.
Do you think that enthusiasm and that support that students are giving to the candidates is reflected in the candidates' policies and what they're saying on the campaign trail?
I do. I think that this primary cycle in particular, we've been seeing candidates really really looking at issues that affect young Americans, particularly issues as they relate to student loans and economic issues and jobs and women's rights and LGBTQ equality. I've been really, really impressed by how much focus there has been on the issues that students are talking about.
Both when they come here and beyond, or are you mostly hearing that in their speeches when, as you told me before the show, all three, now two remaining Democrats who are really big in this race, have come here to campus to speak to you. So I imagine they're speaking to their audience here and talking are important to young people. But when you listen to what they're saying in Iowa and elsewhere on the campaign trail, are you still hearing those issues?
I am. I really think that that the concerns of students on campus are really being reflected in this election cycle.
So what happens for you next Tuesday on primary day?
So next Tuesday, we're going to be doing everything we can to get every single Dartmouth student to the polls, every single Dartmouth student who's eligible to vote here in New Hampshire to the polls. We really believe that it is absolutely vital that every student who is eligible to do so votes and makes sure that our voices as a demographic are heard and that we're taken seriously.
Do you want to wager a prediction on who wins in New Hampshire?
I don't know. You know, one of the exciting things about New Hampshire is that, you know, you don't know how the independent vote is going to turn out, and also just the incredible amount of grassroots organizing. I think it's hard to say.
That's Madeline Cooper. She's president. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
We are broadcasting live from New Hampshire today, hearing from some of you on the phones as well. Let's go to Hajira calling in from Colchester. Hi, Hajira. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Hajira Usmani. I do appreciate Bernie Sanders. He's a genius, like in history, like Lincoln, Franklin Roosevelt, and Eleanor Roosevelt. He wants to bring a change, the change that never happened for years. He wants healthcare, the right for all, not privilege, okay? He wants...
Hajira is a supporter of Bernie Sanders. Hearing that well from you, Thomas in North Troy, what's your perspective? Go right ahead.
Hi. Well, I think the reason why we can... give so much credit toward the political revolution that Bernie Sanders is talking about because his message resonates with everybody. Everybody is being included for a better tomorrow for all of us.
Thomas, thanks for your perspective. A couple of Bernie Sanders supporters there. We're looking ahead to the primary in New Hampshire just a week to go before that happens on Tuesday the 9th. So listeners, tell us what you're seeing, tell us what you're thinking, and draw the line from Iowa to New Hampshire. Anything change for you last night and anything that you're seeing that you think could make an impact in New Hampshire? Tell us what you think of the primary season that has just begun. Our number is 1-800-639-2211 or post a note at vpr.net. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We just heard from the campus Republicans and Democrats here at Dartmouth College, where we are broadcasting live from the Baker Berry Library today. We're joining the collective head turn from Iowa to New Hampshire as the presidential nominating season gets rolling. If you have a question for our guests, Dartmouth political scientist Linda Fowler or Valley News news editor John Gregg, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Particularly interested in hearing from Republicans. Did you have any kind of twinge, any mind change, anything that you felt after the results last night in Iowa? You can also send a note to us. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. Tell us what you're seeing in the run-up now to the New Hampshire primary. So, John Gregg, what did you think from the students that we heard from, some leaders of the campus Republicans and Democrats?
Well, it's great to always see that activism and interest and knowledge. I learn a lot just hearing them talk about issues. And we've done a story about how organized the campaigns, especially the Democrats, are. There's one kind of quirk that affects everyone in New Hampshire potentially, but I think it'll come into play, especially on college campuses. They have a new voter photo ID law. Something went into effect in 2012 where you had to have ID, but you could give an affidavit if you forgot it. now there's a new requirement. If the moderator or election official doesn't recognize you, they have to take your, and you don't have an ID, you can still vote, but they'll take your photo at the polls, essentially what some people have likened to a mugshot. But New Hampshire is very keen about privacy, so there's a law that it has to be digitally removed from the camera immediately. So there was a perfect Granite State solution. The Secretary of State went out and bought 350 cameras, and he got a great deal on Polaroid cameras, $60 each, and some film. And, you know, chances are, I wonder whether some of these students, if they have to submit to these photos, they may never have seen a Polaroid camera in their
life.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. And do you think that will disenfranchise anybody or make it a little bit more difficult, or basically everybody's used to it now?
Well, there weren't as many problems in 2012 when people had to, at least sign an affidavit. But the concern about people who are opposed to it is simply that it's coercive and intimidating and might keep people from voting.
You know, Linda Fowler, while we're talking about the mechanics of voting, I'd love for you, you brought some copies of sample ballots, and I think people forget often that even the candidates, even on the Republican side where we've been seeing a dozen or more candidates campaigning, there are more than just those people on the ballot, and the Democrats have an equal number of large people on the ballot in this state. You can get registered in the state to be on the ballot. So what does it actually look like?
So if you want to pay $1,000 to the state of New Hampshire to declare yourself a candidate, you can. And this year, 30 people have declared themselves as Republican candidates, and 28 people are Democratic candidates. And what makes this troubling for the voter is that the candidates are randomly ordered in every voting district. So, I mean, it's done by
a
computer.
Ballot.
So
yeah.
It's not alphabetical. It's not your status in the polls. It's not the front runner. So if, for example, you're somebody who wants to vote for Kasich, you're going to have to go and look for him. And I'm convinced when I saw the ballot for the two parties in 2008, I'm convinced that one of the reasons why Barack Obama lost to Hillary Clinton were he had all these inexperienced voters, young people who hadn't seen a presidential primary ballot before, and Obama, at least in New Hampshire, in this town, Obama was way at the bottom, so you had to wade through a whole, and Clinton was up at the top. So I think ballot order, political scientists tell us that ballot order can make a difference of 3 or 4 percentage points.
Really? Because, I mean, it seems like that's not giving enough credit to voters who know how to spell the name of the candidate.
You should never give too much credit
to
even the wonderful New Hampshire voters. But in a crowded field on the Republican side where people may not, you know, they may remember, oh, you know, I really like that guy, the senator from Texas, but I'm not sure I can remember his name. And ordinarily, with a small ballot, you'd go and you'd say, oh, okay, I see Cruz there, and that must be the guy I like. But if you have to go looking through 30 names, I think it's going to be tough, particularly with this whole group of people. So Cruz, Rubio, Kasich, Christie, Bush are all within sampling error in the polls. They're so close. So I think it could make a difference in terms of what the order of the finishers.
Tough to prove, but it'll be really interesting to
see. Yeah, I wish I could do an experiment with it.
Well, you are a college professor. You've got a whole group of students here. It could be your guinea pigs. We got a note from Mark who says, I'd like to know how important a candidate's faith and religious practice is to young people when they're in the voting booth. Younger generations across the country are, on average, less religious and less prone to belief and regular worship than previous generations. So I'm interested to know whether a candidate's purported level of religiosity would be a turnoff to younger voters. And maybe we could expand that as well, because we've seen from Pew Research polls over the last decade that New Hampshire and Vermont, which are usually grouped together, are considered the least religious in terms of organized religion of any region in the country. So young voters, for sure, as Mark wants to know, but also any voter in New Hampshire.
Right. John, I mean, Greg? I think the voters are so, you know, mainly secular in terms of their concerns. I noted that Ted Cruz in his victory speech last night started saying, all glory be to God. I don't think he's going to be saying that as he's campaigning in New Hampshire. I was really surprised. Carly Fiorina, one of the Republican candidates, has an ad running on New Hampshire television, in which she talks about reading the Bible. And, you know, that's a wonderful thing that lots of people get a lot out of for various reasons, but it's not something that really is going to appeal as a political talking point to a lot of voters. They prefer to people keep that private.
You think so too, Linda Fowler?
Yes, I do. I think it's a very different approach to religion, even for people who are practicing it and going to church and so forth.
Let's go to Jillian calling in from Woodstock. Hi, Jillian. Go ahead.
Hey there. I was just wondering about some commentary on the speeches after the caucuses. I got a chance to listen to Bernie Sanders' speech. Hillary kind of went on early, it seemed like, and Bernie seemed to wait a bit. And I got a little coverage of Ted Cruz's as well. Just wondering about some commentary there.
So, Jillian, did you hear anything specific that you want to talk about, or you just want our reactions from our guests here on what they heard?
It seemed as though the mood of Bernie Sanders' speech was kind of humble, very appreciative, and it seemed as though Hillary's speech was kind of driving. And I was just wondering about the attitude that we saw from all of the candidates and how that's going to influence in New Hampshire.
Jillian, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. And I think, you know, there's also all of this. Journalists and analysts put their own spin on what they think the mood is from the candidate who's speaking, because I kept hearing that Donald J. Trump was humbled. And, you know, it's hard to tell whether he's humbled or, you know, what that speech actually means. Did either of you hear anything in those speeches that spoke to you about how they're positioning themselves out of the caucuses?
Well, I heard Donald Trump say, "Iowa, we love you." And I think that was another mistruth coming from Donald Trump's mouth. And then Hillary Clinton, I think, didn't she say, "I'm taking a big sigh of relief"?
Yeah.
What she probably ought to be doing is taking a deep breath, because it's really what's going to be happening in the next week. And then, you know, on from there is just going to be a very grinding battle going forward. The last thing, the person who went on, one of the first speakers, Marco Rubio, went on for a long time on a third place finish, but it was could be seen as a victory for him. And I think he was displaying the sort of telegeneity and the aggressiveness going after the Obama administration and the Affordable Care Act. And ultimately, you know, I think Republicans like him because they think he would do well debating against Hillary Clinton if she were the nominee.
Yeah, if you weren't looking at the screen, you would have thought Marco Rubio had come in first. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the expectation game being as important as the numbers of who actually won, quote unquote, in Iowa, because he did keep saying, you know, people said this couldn't happen. And if you think about, people said you couldn't get third place, you know, that would seem odd, but really it is about that momentum now going forward. Did you hear anything, Linda Fowler, in the speeches that...
Well, Jillian stays up a lot later than I do, because I think that Bernie wasn't talking until about 2 a.m. So all I've seen are the clips, and it's hard to characterize what the speech actually was from the clips, because, of course, people have to be highly selective in terms of what they want to say. So I don't really have much of a take on those speeches.
So are you two excited now that every eye is on New Hampshire? Is this good fun for you or exhausting?
Well, I've stopped answering the polls. Now, I always answer polls because I've done polling myself, and I feel sorry for the people who are trying to interview. But the last couple of days has just been excessive. And both my husband and I don't respond to these things. He's town moderator for Hanover, so he doesn't advertise his political opinions. And because I do so much commentary, I don't either. And I certainly, even to a pollster, I don't want to make a public statement. So we heard from Iowans that it got pretty exhausting by the end, and we're all sort of strapping in for a similar ride.
You'd think they'd have you on some do not call list, Linda Fowler, that they'd know.
Don't call us, because we're not going to tell you.
John Gregg, you're not telling either. So,
well, we my wife and I live in Vermont. We got a call last night asking us how we felt about cutting the tail off a cow, which I think does have something to do with some legislation, possibly. So we're not bombarded by the candidates. But I tell you, as someone who has to sort of arrange our political coverage, you know, we have three candidates in the Upper Valley today alone: Bernie Sanders, John Kasich, and Jeb Bush will be at Dartmouth tonight, or in Hanover tonight, rather. And then Chris Christie will be in Lebanon first thing tomorrow morning. So they're really, you know, flying at us, and our reporters enjoy it.
Linda Fowler, I got a note from my producer who says that Bernie Sanders spoke about 11:40 p.m. our time. So you're an even earlier to bed person than...
Absolutely.
Well, this was really fun. I really appreciate both of you coming on the program and talking with us, looking at what happened in Iowa, bringing it to New Hampshire, and looking ahead to what might happen in just a week from today when we have the first-in-the-nation primary here in New Hampshire. Linda Fowler is professor of government at Dartmouth College. John Gregg is news editor at the Valley News. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you, Jane.
Pleasure to be here.
And we will be back in our regular studio tomorrow. We'll be looking at the incentive Vermont state government offers to businesses to get them to create new jobs. The state auditor has questioned the process used to award funds from the Vermont Enterprise Investment Fund. So we'll be looking at that whole process tomorrow live at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Anna St. Marie. Mary Williams directed the show. Chris Albertine was our engineer. Frank Alwine helped with the production. And our executive producer is Patty Daniels. Special thanks to Dartmouth College for hosting us, and to Amy Olson and James Alberghini at Dartmouth for helping everything run so smoothly. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.